WHYY. This is Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, filling in today for Marty Moscowane. Well, the weather's warmed up. The shorts and t-shirts are out, maybe even the bathing suits. And this is when many of us start to think about exercise again. This hour, we take a look at fitness, how to achieve it, the benefits, how to avoid injury, what the trends are, and also training for endurance events like the marathon. How old is too old? The answer might surprise you. Our guests this hour are Karen Glanz, who has run a number of marathons and half marathons. She's also done the Ironman triathlon and somehow manages to fit training along with her work as a behavioral epidemiologist and director for the Center for Health Behavior Research at the University of Pennsylvania. Karen Glanz, welcome to Radio Times.
Thanks.
Robert Cabry is co-director of sports medicine at Drexel University and a team physician for the U.S. Figure Skating Association. Robert Cabry, glad to have you along.
Thanks very much.
And Kevin Miller is fitness coach for the Philadelphia Union. Hi, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
And folks, I hope my voice holds out for this hour. Karen, let's start with you. I read about your story not too long ago, we're talking about this. You're 60 years old, and as someone myself who's plopped firmly in middle age, I thought, this is great. This is absolutely great. In addition to the Ironman, et cetera, you've biked hundreds of miles across the Israeli desert. You've had all sorts of adventures, I imagine, in your fitness career. How did you get into this?
I got into it pretty gradually. I actually started with swimming, and I was a lifeguard and a swim instructor, but never a competitive swimmer when I was young. Kind of gradually, in my 30s, actually added running onto that. Did a little bit of recreational biking. And I think it really ramped up a lot when I moved in 1993 to Honolulu and discovered triathlon and discovered that there was age group triathlon and that one could participate and even be competitive against people your same age, that you didn't have to be elite, you didn't have to be someone with a life history. And so that's what really got me going. Of course, that environment really promoted a lot of outdoor activity,
oh,
but
sure.
I tend to be kind of goal-oriented and a little, obsessive-compulsive at times, and so I kind of transfer some of what I do in my work to my activity, and it increased from there.
What does your training look like on a daily basis?
Most days, I run about 4 miles and swim a mile on weekdays. That's kind of my typical regimen early in the morning before work. On the weekends, I vary things a bit more. Really happy that it's, lighter out and warmer out. And so biking is something I try to do, one or two days at least on the weekend. And I try to bike in to work and back as often as I can.
So you're doing a lot. That doesn't tire you as you start your day? And I imagine your days are on the longer side?
Well, I'm not going to say I don't get tired. I definitely do get tired, especially when I, take on a longer event mm-hmm. or a longer workout. But I really sleep well with the exercise. And on the other hand, I think it does give me more energy.
Robert Cabry, let's talk about how vigorous and even endurance exercise can stave off aging. What does it do for you?
Well, because the exercise that you're doing stimulates your body in many ways, stimulates hormones that are good for the body, as was just mentioned about sleeping so well, exercise does improve sleep. And people would think that they would sleep too much, but it actually improves their sleep as long as you're not exercising right before bed.
Mm-hmm.
But also, again, stimulates a lot of hormones in the body that improve blood vessel health, stimulate the brain, increase chemicals to the brain that improve your neurons. So it does a lot for the body too. Help stave off aging and help stave off illness.
Sleep is such an issue for so many people. What's the rule of thumb then if you're going to work out? You said not before bed, but how many hours before
typically
bed?
About an hour before bed is ideal. Longer than that would be a little bit better, but many of us are using our time as soon as we get home from work to exercise. That may be the only time we have. The key is just not too close to bedtime. Mm-hmm. I think an hour is relatively safe, but also making sure you have time to calm yourself down at night. Get off the phone, get off the computer, relax your body before you go to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm. Let's focus for a couple more minutes on the aging process and fitness, and we'll bring Kevin Miller, who's fitness coach for the Philadelphia Union, into the conversation. Of course, the world of soccer is focused on on Brazil today as the World Cup opens. And I know Marty just did a show on the World Cup, so we're not going to go there too much. But as we're talking about age in sports, let's bring Landon Donovan into the conversation. As soccer fans know, he told Coach Jurgen Klinsmann he wouldn't be able to play every day for the U.S. team, and he was cut, and he's 32 years old. So certain sports have more longevity than others. Let's talk about that a little bit, Kevin.
Well, when you look at the soccer season, I mean, our season in particular, it's such a long season. Mm-hmm. So we start in March and go all the way till the end of October for the regular season. And as the players age, we put a huge emphasis on recovery. So one of my main roles with the team is to focus on good quality sleep patterns, quality nutrition, making sure that they're doing the little things good, making sure that they're strength training a couple days a week. Because as you get older, you know, your body doesn't recover as well. Mm-hmm. But what I have seen in my experience is the athletes that do take the recovery serious and are consistent with their recovery see some tremendous gains as the season goes on, because the body will eventually break down. But if you take care of it, you can see some nice gains and you can stave off the fatigue. Of course, players are going to get tired, and that's going to happen.
You're running for 90 minutes in the heat sometimes, 90 minutes plus.
It's extremely hot. You know, players could lose anywhere from 4 to 8 pounds during a practice or a game, and they have to replenish it. So you have to make sure. I put a big emphasis on sleep. Recovery during the season really is the key to making sure that you can make it through the season.
Mm-hmm. As you age, which sports are the best sports to look at to focus on down the road? I know that there are clubs for folks in their 40s, 50s, and beyond for soccer, although I'm imagining you have to worry about the knees a little bit for that sort of thing. Running, swimming, biking, what do you think, Robert Cabry?
I don't think that you have to focus specifically on what sport is right for you, but I think if you haven't done something ever in a competitive sport like tennis, mm-hmm. You might want to go slowly when you first start out. I don't know that I'd pick up rugby when I was 50 years mm-hmm. old, but as we've heard about the triathlons, running, swimming, biking, I think all those things are good at any age, but the key is just learning how to do it properly, take your time. Don't try to rush through things. Okay, I'm going to run with my friends and do this Broad Street 10-mile run and give yourself 2 weeks to get ready. So I think a lot of it is, even for the young but also for the old, give yourself time to prepare and do it properly, and you'll enjoy it. So I don't think it's the specific sport as much as preparing yourself for it.
And always check with your physician first before you start something vigorous.
Correct.
Good rule of thumb. Karen, what is it about the long race for you that makes it appealing as opposed to the shorter distances like a 5K, which is just over 3 miles? I mean, you completed the Ironman. Why?
I think it's a cumulative kind of thing. For me, I'm more of an endurance person. So there are a lot of people who are sprinters, who are, you know, kind of short racers, and that's where they excel, because I didn't grow up as an athlete at all.
There wasn't much opportunity at that time for girls in sport, not like there is now.
Right, there really wasn't, and it wasn't front and center. My parents didn't think of it. It was really something where I had to take the initiative, and I wasn't, you know, super sporty. I'd like to swim. I was a good floater, actually. And that was, you know, and I was coordinated, and that was something I could do. But because I have a lot of endurance, I think that I like the, you know, having the goals and kind of going the distance, but not all the time. And there's, you know, mixing it up as well.
When you had to train for the Ironman, what was that like? What did you have to do? How many miles per day on the bike and on the road, et cetera?
That was about I would say it was about a 20 to 25 hour training week, plus about 3 to 4 hours of getting stuff ready and cleaned up and afterwards. So it was about, you know, kind of 2 to 3 hours a day on a weekday, but the long training sessions were on the weekend, the long bike rides, the long runs, the, you know, 6-7 hours. I called on a lot of help. There was a lot of support, a lot of people that were just excited about, you know, being in the Ironman World Championship.
Sure.
And that would go out with me. And so that really made it a lot more pleasant, a lot more tolerable. And I cut my work down and I cut my travel down. So that was another big thing.
Have you ever hit the wall, which means you just feel you can't take one step? more and you push through it. It's commonly associated with things like the marathon.
Yeah, sure, I have. And I actually, it happened to me when I did, you know, some of my first marathons, and I didn't know that much about nutrition, which as Kevin was mentioning, about endurance nutrition. I knew about cardiovascular health, you know, basic nutrition for health, because that's part of my professional life, but I didn't know about eating for fuel. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of the opposite of eating to, you know, reduce disease or, you know, keep your weight controlled.
Okay.
And I had to really learn about that. So that was a big factor. It wasn't because I'm not so fast that it was just the going out fast. It was more the lack of energy and the lack of fuel to keep me going.
Yeah, and I want to get into that in just a moment, Kevin, but I'm interested, you said in eating for endurance as opposed to just, I suppose, regular everyday nutrition. What were you adding to your diet? Extra steaks? Extra goo gels? I mean, what were you doing to get through your, what you said, 6 and 7 hour workouts on the weekend?
It often has to do with timing, but yeah, there were, you know, the sporting supplements, and those have evolved a lot over the years, even over the last 10 years, those have changed. There's a lot of experimentation also in terms of what you can kind of keep down while you're being active. So it's about kind of pacing the eating and not saying, I'm going to, you know, not eat, so I'm going to burn off all these calories. It was saying, oh, I need to eat, for instance, in an Ironman competition, you know, you need to eat every 10 to 15 minutes at least a few bites or something in a liquid.
So what are you packing? You're packing something in a bag or around your waist? I mean, that's...
Goo's on the bike handlebars and in the you know, jersey pockets. They also have a place in the Ironman where you can actually pick up, they call it a special needs bag, where you leave extra things that you don't want to be carrying with you because they just slow you down a little bit. Learning that usually it's high protein foods, things like, you know, a turkey sandwich, a peanut butter sandwich, at certain intervals will help to keep you going, but not make you feel bloated and weigh you down.
I'm curious, how many calories, as opposed to what the average calorie intake should be for, you know, a person who is much more sedentary?
Well, the only time I can say that I really counted was on race day for Ironman, and it was about 5,000 calories going in, but they were burned off.
I'm sure they would. They were. You're nodding your head, Robert Cabry? Yes.
Yes. I think it's important that, you know, athletes, especially inexperienced, don't realize that you have to replace those nutrients or you're going to fatigue, you're not going to do well, and then you start building up more and more tiredness over that week so that eventually it catches up with you and you just can't perform properly.
So, and we're coming up on a break here in just a moment, Kevin, but I just wanted to touch base briefly. Recovery is just as important after your players, as we talked about, run for 90 minutes straight in the heat and after practice and everything. What does recovery look like in terms of nutrition?
As soon as the training sessions ends, we try to make sure that they're hydrated, you know, with water and a sports drink, and then also going into a protein shake. After a player, you know, when it gets hot, after a practice, some players might not want to eat solid food right away, in the case of a triathlete too. So you try to get some protein shakes. That's a good way to replenish the nutrition right away. And then throughout the course of the day, you just replenish those foods with basic real food. The emphasis I try to stress to the players is just eat real food. You don't need to spend a lot of money on fancy supplements. It's just basic nutrition.
Okay, we're going to take a short break here. Kevin Miller is fitness coach for the Philadelphia Union. Karen Glantz, an endurance athlete and behavioral epidemiologist at Penn. And Robert Cabry is head or co-director of sports medicine at Drexel University and team physician for the U.S. Figure Skating Association. If you've got any questions, give us a call at 888-477-9499. We're talking about fitness. We'll be right back on Radio Times.
Supporting WHYY, Amtrak. Featuring patripsbytrain.com, offering train packages to destinations along Amtrak's Keystone service line. More information on available excursion packages at patripsbytrain.com.
Next time on The Pulse, top drink choices, soda, iced tea, not so popular, water.
The water fountains are disgusting and dirty and nobody wants to use them.
So how do you promote the option that's good for you?
We want to see our students drinking water. So they got these new, cooler water fountains.
Using design to nudge people toward healthy choices.
And the first thing that you notice when you walk into the main reception area is this beautiful grand staircase.
The Pulse, tomorrow morning at 9 on WHYY.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. When Russian immigrant Boris Fishman wrote a letter asking for reparations for his Holocaust survivor grandmother, he noticed how little proof he needed to provide. So he wondered, what would happen if someone tried to write fake letters? That's the inspiration for his debut novel, A Replacement Life. We'll talk to him next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Support for WHYY comes from the new Wells Fargo Propel World American Express card, designed to bring the world within reach for Wells Fargo customers. Details at a local Philadelphia area branch or wellsfargo.com/propel. Wells Fargo, the world is open. Keep exploring.
This is Radio Times and WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowain today. Our guests are Karen Glanz, endurance athlete and behavioral epidemiologist at Penn. Kevin Miller is fitness coach for the Philadelphia Union. And Robert Cabry is co-director of sports medicine at Drexel University and a team physician for the U.S. Figure Skating Association. Our topic this hour is fitness, not only for the endurance athlete, but also for the person who is more sedentary and is thinking, wow, the weather is nice. I want to get started. I want to get back into shape. I want my clothes to fit better. But how do I get going on this? If you'd like to join the conversation, please feel free to give us a call at 888-477-9499. We've got the experts here in studio. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And Kevin Miller, during the break, you were talking about, as we mentioned, the person who really is sedentary for the most part. You're at your desk all day long. Perhaps you're feeling tired. Your clothes aren't fitting as well. You want to get into it, but the wrong thing to do is to just start running a couple of miles, correct? You need an assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. I think somebody who's just trying to start an exercise program is to have a starting point. You need to know where you're starting. And a good thing to do is work with a medical professional or a physical therapist, somebody who's licensed, and a good screen could be a functional movement screen. So if you're going to eventually run, or you're eventually going to cycle or do different events, or you're going to do a boot camp, you really need to know your starting point, because a qualified professional can find some imbalances in your movement which could potentially reduce your chances of getting hurt. So I think that's a tremendous first step for somebody who's trying to get into an exercise program, because everybody just wants to go out and start moving, which is great, mm-hmm. but you want to move efficiently. You want to make sure that you're moving properly so down the road you don't have repetitive injuries.
And if you're not doing it the right way, Robert Cabry, the answer that your body gets is pain, and it is a messenger. Too many of us who are, shall we say, a little compulsive about our sport, we ignore that. When should you listen to pain?
Yeah, I think you have to listen to your body. I think the compulsion is the key. We were also talking during the break about just get out and do something. And I think the key to that is just take your time. Start off slow. Don't plan on, like I said, give yourself 2 weeks to prepare for a 10-mile run. Get yourself ready for it. Do something you really enjoy. But listen to your body. If you start to have issues that don't go away with rest, get them addressed and make sure that you're not causing harm so that you can keep doing what you're doing and not end up injured where you're not going to be able to do it for several weeks or longer.
We've got some calls coming in at 888-477-9499, and we're going to get to those in just a moment. But before the thought flies out of my head, Karen Glanz, how long do you normally prepare for the 10-mile run or the marathon? Weeks, months?
It depends a lot on the length of the event, and what it is. But my own personal approach is to kind of train at a base level year-round and then ramp it up for the specific event. If it's going to be a big cycling event or, a trip even, then, kind of training specifically for that and trading off other activities in order to get more prepared. There are a lot of training plans out there. So there are kind of a 3-month training plan for a marathon. But most of those assume, as I think we've heard from Robert and Kevin, mm-hmm. that you already are doing something, not that you're just getting from zero to running a 5K weekly and then, building up for the marathon. So I think that thinking ahead helps.
Okay, let's get to the calls. Robert from Jenkintown, welcome to Radio Times. Hi, Robert.
Hello, how are you?
Well, thank you. So what's your question?
Well, I'm trying to do a fundraiser for Ride of Dreams, and it's a 250-mile bike ride from Pennsylvania to Hershey. And I was wondering, it's my first time riding such a long distance, and I'm looking for some tips.
All right. Some tips for Robert, Robert Cabry.
Okay.
And thanks for the call, Robert.
I also like to ride distance. I train for a ride called the MS-150 every year. It's a 150-mile bike ride. And I think to prepare yourself, the key is to make sure that you have the right bike. I think if you're going to do a long distance, you need a road bike, not typically just a hybrid or a mountain bike. I think it's good to get it fitted, meaning go into your bike shop and make sure it fits you properly so that your body fits well on it. That way you'll reduce knee pain and back issues. And then the next step is preparing to train, meaning shorter distances to start. Get used to drinking while you're riding and eating while you're riding, because do a long distance, you're going to need to do those things, and you need to know what you can tolerate, like we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. You may not be riding chomping down on a tuna sandwich. You may want to bring gels or those types of things, but you need to find out what your body can tolerate. And I think that's a good start.
Right before, let's talk about, again, training and food, Kevin Miller. Right before an event, whether it's a game or a long ride, what should you be eating? We've heard carbs. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think it's different for every athlete. Some athletes respond really well to a high carbohydrate diet. Some athletes respond to a higher fat diet. I think you're starting to see that in the research. But I'd like to recommend about 3 hours before a game. So if we were to have a 4 o'clock game, and the guys start out with a really good breakfast, with some protein, some fat, some carbohydrates. And then about 1 o'clock, they could have, for example, a sweet potato with grilled chicken. That would be a good balance, because you're going to have the carbohydrates that will fuel you during the game, the protein that will help the muscle, and just good, sensible nutrition, you know, about 3 hours before. And then when you're about an hour before the game, you know, you just sip on whatever drinks you like. That could be water, just to stay properly hydrated, if there's a sports drink that you like. Again, every athlete's different, but I always recommend a good balance of mixed carbohydrates and fats to fuel you through the game.
Yeah, the last thing you want before any event is the rock in your stomach and a trip to the porta potty along the way.
Yeah, and I think the number one rule when it comes to nutrition is to make sure you don't try anything new on game day. You know, everything, say whether it's Karen doing an Ironman, you practice everything before the day, just to know how your body responds.
Okay, let's get back to the phones. Sean, welcome to Radio Times.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
I just wanted to add to what Kevin was saying about nutrition. About 4 years ago, I was in terrible shape. I was on high blood pressure medication and cholesterol medication. I was 37 years old. I started just eating food that wasn't packaged, just real food, and started doing yoga on a Groupon. And 6 months later, I finished my first triathlon.
Good for you.
And I'm 41. I'm a triathlete. I haven't been in this good a shape since I was 25.
Sean, thank you so much for the telephone call. And you know what, Karen Glanz, I bet you hear this story all the time.
Sure. I mean, people are surprised. You know, they tiptoe into it, and then when they rise to the occasion, they are surprised how good it feels, both physically and mentally.
Kevin, you've got a tweet from Jake here. What is your experience with yoga and implementing yoga into your fitness routine with Union?
Yeah, I think we started yoga a couple months ago, and I'm new to the experience. And I think yoga is something I didn't do until last couple months. And I think it's a fantastic way for athletes to improve their mobility, improve their stability. We talk about recovery, which is critical for athletes. So, you know, my feeling is that more professional athletes, more high school athletes, more recreational athletes should be incorporating yoga one day, 2 days a week to improve your mobility, stability, and really focus on the recovery aspect. And I think it's a great asset to add to your program.
Obviously, yoga has been with us for forever. Robert Cabry, I'd like to turn our attention to trends in workouts, barefoot running. I think that's probably out now. Zumba, but people love their Zumba. That's been around for a while. How do you distinguish what works and what doesn't work for more than a few months?
You know, that can be difficult because there's always new trends, and we typically see them in January right after the Christmas holiday when everybody wants to lose their holiday weight. Things like CrossFit and all the strength training videos you can buy on TV, the different shoes. I think that you have to try to get some advice from someone that understands fitness as to whether something's appropriate for you. You know, the barefoot running, the bouncing shoes, the CrossFit, all can be a problem if you don't know what you're doing. And I think, again, it goes back to what I was saying before, is you work yourself into it. You know, you don't join a CrossFit class, stand with a bunch of people that have done it for a long time and think you're going to do what they can do. So I think whatever you try, you get some advice from the right professional, and you take it slow.
Okay, and let's focus a little bit more on trends in gear, like the Fitbit. I don't know, Kevin, if you employ that with the Union or that sort of thing. You know, with a Fitbit, if I'm understanding correctly, and you're nodding your head, Karen Glantz, your gym can actually track what you're doing for fitness if you want them to do so.
Well, actually, we have used a Fitbit recently mm-hmm. in a study to try to increase walking in older adults. We actually did an experiment to find out if people would respond well to an incentive of basically money in their pocket for meeting their walking goals, or an incentive of money donated to charity in their name, or no incentive and just tracking. So we used the Fitbit, and it was remotely monitored. It was wired into our website at the University of Pennsylvania, and our average participant had an age of 80.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found was very interesting was that any kind of an incentive worked better than just getting the feedback, including an incentive that was to charity. We had really good results with that. But a few weeks ago, I ran into one of the women who participated in the study. She lives at the senior community where my father was living. And she said that she would walk around her room to meet her goal at night and that she had never done anything like that. So I think for people who have never had monitoring and feedback, that can be a powerful tool and kind of a fun experience as well.
Sure. So, Kevin, we're getting to you. Do you use anything like that with the union?
We don't use the Fitbit. We use some other piece of equipment to monitor their progress. But one mm-hmm. thing that I would like to say with the athletes, with the union and athletes just starting a training program, is to implement a heart rate monitor.
Okay.
I think that's a fantastic piece of equipment to use from day one because it will tell you exactly how hard you're working, and more importantly, how much you're recovering. And over time, you can see if your fitness is improving. So if you track yourself in the morning. So that's something we try to implement with the players on a daily basis to see how they're playing, how they're recovering.
All right. We've got lots of calls. And if I haven't said this before, thank you for those who've called earlier in the show. Joseph, let's go to you. Joseph in New Jersey. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hello. I'm just trying to figure out. I haven't worked out in a while, and I want to get back to working out and get a normal routine going, and I just want to know how I should do that without getting hurt.
Okay, we touched on this a little bit, but Robert Cabry, your answer to Joseph?
Okay, Joseph, I think the key is starting off slow, but making sure you do something you like to do. If you don't like to run, don't run. Pick biking or pick tennis, something that you really enjoy that you're willing to go out there and do it, and try that first, and I think that's going to be important in making sure that you're eating right, hydrating, and making sure you're getting enough rest afterwards. And I think that's going to help a lot. But do something you enjoy.
All right. Thanks, Joseph. John, you're next. John from Germantown. He's been hanging in there for a while. You're live on Radio Times. Hi, John.
Thanks. Hi. Dovetailing your show with a recent show from Dr. Oz, where his experts stated unequivocally that a goodly number of protein drinks and protein powder have lead in their protein from foreign sources such as China. I'm wondering what your guests will do and have done and continue to do to determine the sourcing of the protein powder or drinks they have and whether they might contain lead.
Well, that's an interesting question. Kevin, I see you nodding your head.
I think there's a great point that John brings up. Supplements can be sold very easily right now. And truthfully, people don't really know exactly what is going into the product. One rule I always have is look at the back of the product and, number one, see how many ingredients you have in that product. We're very picky with what products we give to our athletes because it's my responsibility to make sure that they have a clean, real food product that they're eating. So you have to be extremely careful with that. I would seek the advice of an expert and a nutritionist, or make sure you speak to the company. Don't just go out to a store and pick up a $10, you know, tub of protein powder and think you got a deal, because you're probably going to be consuming something that might not be the best option. So. But the truth is, I would always recommend food first. You know, you can get the majority of your nutrients from food, and then if you need to supplement, that supplement it with a high-quality product.
All right. Thanks, John, for the telephone call to Radio Times. And our number, by the way, is 888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Karen Glantz, to you, as we mentioned earlier, you are a behavioral epidemiologist at Penn. Just in brief, describe your job, because you work with issues like nutrition and obesity, correct?
Right. My job is very much of an interdisciplinary focus. So I'm trained as a social and behavioral scientist. I am not a pure card-carrying psychologist, sociologist, or anthropologist, but kind of a hybrid there. And then the other part of my discipline is public health, which is interested in populations. So unlike somebody who's maybe doing psychological counseling and working with individual clients or patients, I'm more interested in populations and how we can affect problems that, cut across large groups of people, communities. They may differentially affect certain communities, such as lower income or certain neighborhoods or, minority groups, and trying to understand what influences behavior, not just within the person, but in their environment and structures and policies and in the public policies also that affect them. So trying to, solve problems from a lot of different angles and not just, if you will, kind of blaming the person for, say, not exercising or not eating right.
Well, let's touch for just a moment on, obesity then. A huge question in our country, of course. There's been a lot of information about it in the last 5 years or so. First Lady Michelle Obama's Let's Move program is an example. One of the things Mrs. Obama has been trying to do in her initiative is to give parents information they need to make better decisions about nutrition for their children's health. Do you find that that information is getting to parents and society as a whole in your employment, in your job?
Well, having somebody who's so high visibility, such as the First Lady, is an incredible platform for getting out information that might not have been on the radar screen of people who have so many other things on their minds that they're dealing with day to day. So I think that's great. But one of the things that we always say is information is necessary but not sufficient. So if people don't have information, we've even heard examples of it today, they can go down the wrong path inadvertently. But information is not enough. People need support, they need structures, they need motivation, and they need to deal with whatever is kind of getting in the way of taking those actions. So parents, for example, have a lot of other things that might stand in the way of feeding the ideal, you know, diet to their family. We have to address those too once they have nutrition. Okay. I mean, information.
Let's get back to the phones. Carol, you're live on Radio Times. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to ask about nutrition and training for youth. I'm actually organizing the Ride of Dreams that your earlier caller, Rob, is doing. And this is a charity ride that we're doing for Neighborhood Bike Works, which is a youth program. So we're actually bringing a big group of teenagers along with us on the ride on the 250 miles. So we've been doing training rides, and I've been researching some nutrition, but I wanted to ask your guests if there's anything specific I should be paying attention to keep teenagers safe and healthy and you know, getting them ready to do such a big task.
Carol, thank you so much for the call to Radio Times. Kevin Miller, I'm going to toss that your way because I know you have a youth program. As a matter of fact, you have, I think it's Zach Pfeiffer, the youngest player ever signed to the union. He was 15 when he was signed.
Right.
So your advice to Carol?
Yeah, I think when you're talking about teenagers, just getting them to make subtle changes is a big step. You know, a lot of teenagers, you know, could eat a little better. So I think number one is hydration. If you're going to have these teenagers go on a long bike ride, number one, they need to make sure that they're hydrated. So you start with water. Another good supplement could be coconut water or whatever sports drink that you like. I would definitely put a big emphasis on fruits and vegetables to get you through that ride.
And you know what? I'm going to have you hold your thought there for just a moment because we do have to take a short break. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moscowane. We're talking about fitness. Dr. Robert Cabry, Kevin Miller, and Karen Glanz, behavioral epidemiologist at the University of Pennsylvania, our guests. We will be right back. Stay with us.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
As I'm sure you know, Hillary Clinton is on a book tour. On the next Fresh Air, she makes a stop on our show. What will I ask her? How will she respond? You and I will find out on the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
The thing about war documentaries,
dead soldiers, dead civilians don't get up and walk away at the end of the scene. They stay dead.
Filmmaker author Sebastian Junger on Afghanistan, Brotherhood, and the question of whose war is it? That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowain. Our guest today, Robert Cabry, co-director of sports medicine at Drexel University. Kevin Miller is fitness coach for the Philadelphia Union. And Karen Glanz is a behavioral epidemiologist at the University of Pennsylvania and an endurance athlete. If you've got a question or comment, the number is 888-477-9499. Our email is radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We've got a lot of interest in this subject today. And just before we hit the break, I had to stop you, Kevin. We were talking about youth and endurance and getting started. I don't think you'd finished your thought quite about nutrition.
Sure.
If you could do that. And then I want to segue into how young is too young. So let's just talk, recap the nutrition piece of it, if you would.
Well, it all starts with breakfast. So, you know, if you have athletes who are going to do a training ride or just training for a race, it has to start with a good quality breakfast. That could be eggs for some people, that could be carbohydrates for other people, whatever works well for you. But if you miss breakfast, then we're already behind the eight ball. Mm-hmm. So you have to start there. Another good thing with kids is smoothies. So talk about post-workout training, because most people like to drink smoothies. So say, for example, you get strawberries, mango, and if you want to add some fat, you get half an avocado mixed in there. And all of a sudden, you have a really nutritious smoothie for the kids post-workout, which really adds a lot of benefits to their training.
Okay, but quickly, how are you going to tell the kid the avocado's in there?
not the first time, but okay. Then the second time, they're going to be surprised how good it tastes.
Because seriously, you know how kids can be.
Absolutely. I have three kids myself, so I understand. But once they start, I think it comes down to education.
Sure.
Once kids learn, then they make the changes.
And Robert Cabry, what I wanted to go to next was youth and sports and overuse injuries. I mean, you're seeing kids in high school. I know of one kid that can't do soccer in college because she's had so many concussions. I mean, how young is too young? How intense does it need to get before you say, okay, we got to pull back here?
During the break, Kevin and I were talking about, youth and exercise and those types of things. And I think it should, I don't think there needs to be a cutoff for how early, but as Kevin and I were saying, it needs to be fun. They need to enjoy it. It doesn't need to be so structured. And I think nowadays we're so structured with soccer year-round, baseball year-round, football year-round. I think the kids need to enjoy what they're doing, but also get a mix of other things so they don't get bored, but also give their bodies a chance at a young age to develop properly. And I think without an appropriate break, about 3 or 4 months a year of not playing that year-round sport is going to be ideal to prevent them from burning out too quickly or getting an injury that may end their careers.
Okay, we've got an email from Mimi Fave. I believe I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Mimi. She says, as a 55-plus-year-old, getting back into it, she was an avid road bike rider and worked at it at a gym until she had kids, the story of many of us, abandoned it for 25-plus years, and then this is how she got back. She went into yoga. She bought a new road bike. The local trails are safe and free, and then she started to use apps on her phone, her iPhone. She really likes this. Let's talk about that. She said she does a daily food diary, mapping apps for rides and the walk, her heart monitor. She lowered her weight and resting heart rate, I guess. So these are all, it sounds like she chose the right plan. Robert?
Yes, I think so. I think the advantage of doing those things is it gives you a way to track goals yourself. It can be rewarding because you can see the changes in your body. You can see that you're able to go further and not feel as tired. You can see you're burning more calories. You can see the effect it's having on your heart rate. So I think being able to follow yourself with those different apps can really keep you motivated.
And Karen?
I completely agree with Robert. I want to add to that that the tools, you know, I think we have so many tools available these days. People should use what we have on hand. But just like different activities, the tools are going to work for some people and they're not going to work for other people. So if you're a person that likes to monitor and likes that constant feedback and tracking and seeing where you're going, by all means, go for it. You know, it can be fun and it can be a little obsessive at times, but do it. But a person who doesn't like to do that can take a different path. They can just map out how far it is to get on their walk or their run and kind of build up that way. So it really, it's a matter of, you know, what fits your personality that works for you.
I think, we're going to get to the calls here in a second, but I think really to keep up an exercise regime, you have to be a little obsessive, don't you? You can't let that, oh, I got out of bed, I just don't feel like it feeling win. Am I right?
Yeah, I think you're right, too. I think there's a couple things when you're starting a training program. Number one, you need to be consistent. And two, I think what's really important is having a support group. So, you know, if you're doing a triathlon or if your goal is just to lose 10 pounds of weight, having that support group, because that will push you, that will motivate you. And, of course, it can become a little bit obsessive. You need to know when you need to train hard and when you need to recover hard. Because if you train too hard too often, that's where you set yourself up for an injury.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Holly in Chestnut Hill, you're live on Radio Times. Hi, Holly.
Oh, hi, Mary. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
So I bought myself for Mother's Day a heart rate monitor, and I've been using it in my spin class or my kickbox class, and I look at my target heart rate, and I look at what my heart rate is as I'm exercising, and I've had a couple people in my exercise class tell me that when my heart rate on the monitor is getting to, like, 95, 100, 103%, that at that point I'm burning muscle and not really burning fat, and so that I should be kind of toning down the intensity that I'm working at in order to actually burn fat.
All right.
So I was wondering if your guests have any, you know, if there's an optimal range that I should be working at to target fat, and if there is truth that I'm actually burning muscle instead of the fat.
Okay. Holly, thanks for the call. Robert Caber, you're nodding your head.
It's a good question, and I think it's important. I think training at levels at 95 or 100% of your maximum heart rate for short bursts can improve your overall aerobic fitness, but doing it for too long, you're in an anaerobic instead of aerobic mechanism, and you can, over a long term, burn protein or muscle instead of fat. For fat burning, you want to shoot for a target of about 78 to 80 or 85% of your maximum heart rate for longer periods of time. This will burn up the sugar quicker, and then help you to mobilize the fat versus pushing your body to its limit.
Okay, Heather, you're next on Radio Times. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is, I'm an endurance runner. I have been for 4 years. And as you might be able to hear, I'm sick right now. And it's the first time I've been sick, I think, really, since I started running. I forgot how much it sucks. But I'm battling right now when to know when it's okay to run and when I'm pushing my body too hard.
Oh, that's a good question. Karen Glanz, you've been doing this for years. When do you know?
I think you have to, first of all, you know, judge when your symptoms require medical attention. And if they do, then, you know, kind of do this in consultation with a physician. But if they're not, if it's an ordinary cold or, you know, just a brief bout of something seasonal, then I think you have to listen to your body. One of the things that strikes me in the one of the previous callers was, you know, how do you get going and stay going? And I think for many people, there's a certain point at which you really like, and your body is so used to having, you know, regular exercise,
sure,
that you don't feel as good without it. And I kind of getting that sense from you. So, you know, just kind of, you know, staying still may not feel good. But you have to test yourself, and you really have to slow down oftentimes. So you might walk instead of running when you're not well.
Heather, thanks for the call. Kevin Miller, when do you pull the plug on your players?
Well, I was going to say with Karen, I think three things you really want to look at is, number one, your sleep quality. When you wake up in the morning, how do you feel? Number two, are you achy when you wake up? Endurance athletes tend to be a little achy here and there, but if you're constantly sore, that's a problem. And do you feel refreshed? You know, 5 minutes after you wake up, are you alert? Your body's going to tell you when you need to train hard and rest hard, and just listen to it. And I think you don't need the fancy monitoring if you don't have it. Mm-hmm. Your body will tell you when you're ready to take a break.
One other thing with illness, I think, to keep in mind is fever. You should not be exercising if you have a fever. Using 101 as your cutoff, fever is an indication that the body is not doing well, and that should be a day of rest.
Good advice. Karen, have you ever taken a DNF, which means did not finish? And if you did, what's your philosophy about it?
I haven't. I've actually fought through. I've not actually ever also had a flat tire during a race. I've had flat tires before a race. I have certainly had times when I've decided that I'm no longer pursuing a particular time or trying to compete against that person with the age number on the back of their leg, which is what we have in, you know, triathlon races. I actually did not finish the Chesapeake Bay swim last year, which is a 4.4 mile swim across the Chesapeake, because the currents came up too heavy. So I guess that was a DNF, and I said, you know, take me in a boat, I'm ready to go. But I got about 80% of the way there, so I didn't feel too bad about that.
All right, let's get to Alice in Westchester. Welcome, Alice.
Oh, hi. Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about recovery. I'm going to be doing the 3-day breast cancer walk, the 20 miles a day, and I'm okay with the walking. But can you suggest some things I should do on the two nights to make sure that I'm okay for the following day?
Robert Cabry?
That's a good question, and I think rest is key. There's going to be a lot of people there, a lot of socializing. You may not want to just sit around, but I think getting appropriate rest, as we've been saying throughout the morning, making sure you're staying well hydrated, and make sure you're eating well that night. That's when you want to get your protein in and your carbohydrates. During the walk, some water, maybe an energy drink, some carbohydrates, but afterwards is when you want to make sure you're rehydrating and refueling your body, but making sure you're resting.
Kevin?
One other point I wanted to make is, if during that walk, I'm a big believer in manual therapy. If they have any massage therapists out there, that's a fantastic way to allow your body to calm down and recover. So that might be able to help you on that.
Sure, 20 miles is a challenge per day.
That's a long walk. So number one, make sure you have good shoes, and two, make sure you're properly hydrated and fueled.
Thanks, Alice, and good luck on that. We've got an email from Sarah. Can our guest speak about exercise and menopausal women? Does it make women more prone to injury, Robert Cabry?
Again, good question. I think it is important for women in the postmenopausal time to exercise. I think overdoing it puts all of us at risk for injury, but I think the lack of the hormone supplement for women that's so important for their bodies puts them at risk, especially with osteoporosis. One of the things I specialize is in osteoporosis, and one of the biggest things to help patients is to exercise. Weight-bearing exercise is key. Walking is fine. Walking is a little better than biking. Biking a little better than swimming because you want the gravity. But exercise is important, and just making sure you listen to your body to reduce injury.
It can actually build bone to reduce the osteoporosis?
Yes, it actually will build bone, and it helps stimulate the body. And the reason is it's stress. The body detects the stress of the exercise, and the bone will get stronger.
Okay. Donna, let's go to Donna in Sweetwater, New Jersey. Thanks for calling, Donna. What's your question?
Yes, hi. Good morning. It's not really a question. It's a little shout-out for home gardening. I think that nutrition is really key to any kind of a healthy body fit for exercise program. And I know there's a problem with the cost of organic food for many people, mm-hmm. but I wanted to comment that you can get rid of part of your grass lawn and grow food instead. It's really easy to grow some nice kale, some beautiful lettuces, lots of peas. And it's a fraction of the cost of buying organically in the supermarket.
Sure, Donna. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. I see you nodding your head, Kevin Miller. Well, you know, it just makes sense. From garden right to table, as fresh as can be and without all the processing that goes into it, it's just going to be best for you.
I think that's fantastic. If you're fortunate enough to be able to put a garden in, that's fantastic. And I tell the athletes I work with, just buy the best food that you can afford. If that's organic, great, or whatever quality you can afford.
Robert Cabry, we touched a moment ago on exercise in the menopausal woman. Let's talk about age in general, both genders. How old is too old to get started? I mean, if somebody is 85 and they're listening and they want to get going.
Again, just like youth, I think in the older folks, there is no real cutoff. I think it's important for all of us, especially as we age, to exercise, because it goes with the old term, you don't use it, you lose it.
Sure.
The body will break down, the muscles get weak, so I think it's really important. I think going slow, getting out and go for a walk, but also talking to your doctor, making sure that you're healthy enough for certain types of exercise is the key, particularly as we get into our 70s, 80s, 90s. But I have plenty of patients in their 90s playing tennis and enjoying it and doing fine. So,
all right. We've got enough time to talk about a tweet from Roger. Roger asks, what exercise advice do you give parents of young children pressed for time, money, and energy? And, you know, if you've got young children, you're not sleeping much. Kevin?
Well, I think with kids, you have to start with the basics. You know, body weight training doesn't cost anything. So are you able to squat, do push-ups, do pull-ups? You can go out to a park and get a fantastic exercise in. If you're on a budget, resistance bands are fantastic. So very minimal investment. With kids, depending on their age, I wouldn't have them strength training until they get to a certain point. But body weight and resistance bands are a fantastic way for kids to start their training.
But for parents who are unable to get away from the house, they've got a six-month-old, the child is sleeping, it's hard to get out and do that. How do you fit the resistance bands?
You can do that right in your house. You
sure.
can do that absolutely in your house. I mean, I think the misconception is that people think they need to exercise for 60 minutes a day, and you can get a fantastic workout in 15 to 20 minutes. It's all about what your goals are, what you're able to do, and if you have a newborn in the house, maybe it's put it on a yoga DVD, something to that extent. But I think body weight training is a fantastic place to start. I think it's a place where most people overlook it,
mm-hmm.
but it's essential to setting up a good training plan.
And I remember myself pushing the double stroller, packing the Cheerios, packing the juice mm-hmm. boxes, and handing them over the top as I was trying mm-hmm. to get my workout in. So
yeah.
there are ways to do it. And in most weathers, you can cover them up with a little tarp. So anyway, Karen Glantz, before we wrap up the show, anything on the horizon for you in terms of events? What's the next adventure?
Well, I guess the big goal that I have right now is for the fall, the Ride to Conquer Cancer, which is to benefit the Abramson Cancer Center, Cancer Research and Care. It's a 150-mile, two-day ride.
All right. Well, good luck with that. I guess we're wrapping up the show. We're running out of time. We could have gone on for another hour with this, but Karen Glantz is behavioral epidemiologist at the University of Pennsylvania and a marathon and triathlon veteran. Thank you for joining us. Robert Cabry, head of sports medicine or co-director of sports medicine at Drexel University, and Kevin Miller is fitness coach for the Philadelphia Union. We invite you to check out Radio Times on Facebook, Twitter, and our podcasts. Our producers are Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant with Sophie Reed, and Ariel Plotnick. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Musk-Wayne. Thanks so much for joining us.